The countdown is on and holiday shopping season is officially here. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. Don't wait. The most meaningful gifts get scooped up fast, and now's the perfect time to cross names off your list. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, making every gift feel meaningful and truly one of a kind. Like the NFL Game Day Bingo Set, customizable with your favorite team's colors and name, perfect for your football-loving family and friends. Not shopping for a sports fan? Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from average gardeners to home chefs. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. When you're shopping at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/BA2022. That's uncommongoods.com/BA2022 for 15% off. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. It's your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is my co-host up in the Great White North. It's Dylan White. What's going on, Dylan? How are you today, man? Big things happening. The hot stove's already hot.
Is it? I hope so, because it snowed this week here in Toronto. I don't know if it snowed where you are.
We got some flakes. We got some flakes.
Yeah. Did not appreciate that. Kind of caught me by surprise. But yeah, I'm glad the hot stove is percolating and ready to sign a bunch of high-profile free agents, and hopefully the Jays sign a bunch of those.
We'll see, man. I think they could spend some money. It's not out of the realm of possibility. There's some names out there. I've spent the week making some calls, doing some work, getting ready to write some reports on a couple of the MPB imports that are coming over. Not the greatest year of all time. Not as much hype as Sasaki, not as good as Yamamoto, not as good as Ohtani, but some interesting names nonetheless. If you want to, we can talk some of those names right now. We'll start with the, I think, probably the most famous name of the players coming over, and that is Minnetaka Murakami, third baseman, big power bat, fair amount of swing and miss, good on base, though. So he's sort of your classic three true outcome type of slugger. He put up historic home run numbers in Japan. It was bottom of the barrel swing and miss. Like, I think it was bottom 3rd percentile in terms of his whiff numbers. He's like 99th percentile in chase rate, so he doesn't expand at all. He walks a lot. Good variance between the swing rate. And so, like, he does mitigate some of the risk when it comes to the swing and miss. But it's an acquired taste. I kind of wonder where he's going to end up and just how much money he's going to get. Because, there is a major concern here with the swing and miss. The other part of it is he's a below average, maybe worse than that. Might be a 30 grade third baseman. It's pretty bad. Might be a DH only guy. So you're really gambling on the power here and adding, a potential cleanup number 5, number 6 hitter that can slug 35 plus home runs and maybe carry the team for weeks at a time. At other times, he's going to slump really, really hard. So I don't know if you've dug in on Murakami at all, if you have any thoughts. I don't know where to fall on this one, because I can see the upside of, like, the power playing, even if it's bad batting average, especially if you're in an OBP or a points league. 5x5, he's a little more risky in that sense. But a lot of it's going to depend on landing spot, the type of park he gets. Like, let's just say perhaps, I don't think he will. Let's say he lands in Cincinnati. Well, that's kind of a great park and a pretty fun lineup, right? He's got some talent around him. If he ends up in St. Louis, I don't think he's going to end up in any of these places. He ends up in St. Louis where, he's the DH or whatever. I don't like that fit so much in the park and all that sort of thing. So I think it's going to depend on some of that. It sounds like he's not a fit for the Dodgers and that they're not in on him. I'm going to be really interested to see who is. I know the Jays have been a team that's come up. You know, I guess if they decide to play Springer in the outfield, that potentially works. But you can't play him at third base. And I don't think you're sitting Ernie Clement's defense and all that sort of stuff. Even though he's probably a more impactful offensive player, he's not going to have the defense. And you're giving up quite a lot there. You may almost be better with Vlad at third. So going back to it, I don't know if you have any thoughts on Murakami. He's already been posted. So we should know within the next, you know, month and a half, where he lands. It'll be interesting to, like I said, to see who is in fact in on him.
Yeah. Didn't I see Eno maybe posting that, like against high velocity, his slash line was really bad. So I'm a bit scared. I think if I have like a first five FYP pick, I'd be worried, of kind of wasting, or the potential of wasting that pick. If I'm after five, I probably would do it because there is upside.
Sure.
But yeah, it's kind of like Eric Thames, like an FYPD coming over type of idea for me, where there could be a lot of power, pretty good on base, younger, but not quite sure. Yeah,
I mean, he's still only 25. So, yeah. You know, I think one, like I did hear Eno's comments. I think he said something like two at 30. I've talked to teams. Nobody that's going to be in on him is going to go in at 2 years. Like, you're going to buy this guy for 5 or 6 years. And the evaluators I've spoken with some high level executive type of positions, about this, guys that have traveled to Japan, guys that have seen these players 15 times. I've talked to a few agents that have pitched to these guys as well. I just, if you're buying this guy, you're expecting there to be an adjustment period. And I've heard this from a lot of people just generally with Japanese players. And I think you kind of see this as the case. There's a cultural period that needs to take place. Mm-hmm. And some of that stuff settles itself out. Some guys are better at handling it than other guys are. So I think you need to factor all that in. But you even look at Shohei Ohtani. The best Shohei Ohtani we got years after that initial debut. He was a better pitcher than he was a hitter right when he initially came over. We look at those numbers. They're not even in line with the guy that we've seen the last few years. I think Senga was kind of the opposite, where he had a lot of success and then guys kind of figured him out a little bit. Imanaga had some success, but these were older, you know, developed players, which we'll get into Amai and Akimoto, who are a little bit older. Mm-hmm. I think those guys, especially if they're like in their prime, 27, 28, 29, they settle in a little bit easier. But even Yamamoto is as good as he is. I mean, amazing, right? We're just coming off this historic performance in October where he wins the World Series MVP. His initial like nine starts, remember, was a lot of discourse around the fastball quality and he made some adjustments and he figured it out. Like, I think that's all stuff that we have to bake in here, that if they're good initially, that's great. Murakami, I think, is one where he could be hitting like 190 come May 15th, right? With some home runs, but the batting average could be bad. He could be striking out 35% of the time or something like that. And then things start to turn. He figures some stuff out. I've heard some debate on, can a team fix the holes in the swing or not? Some people think, no, it's just part of the package. You got to deal with it. It's almost like Joey Gallo. But he doesn't have the supporting skills of Joey Gallo, right? Others think, no, I think you get him into the right hitting environment, these guys could make some tweaks and get him to more contact, have him, you know, a more consistent swing in the zone that's a little bit more adjustable. Some of it just sounds like it's timing issues. JJ was kind of talking about this, and I think – with the 95 plus stat, the issue there is like you just don't see it as much over there. Yeah, there's only a handful of guys that throw it, and he's got bat speed, so I think that's just a timing adjustment. Like it's like kids when they jump up from one level to another in Little League, like from minors to the majors in your town, and all of a sudden guys are throwing 50 plus miles an hour, whatever it is, you know. Guys eventually make an adjustment. It takes a little time, right? Timing is a big issue, is the biggest part of hitting. Being on time and, you know, making sure your move times up well and syncs with the pitcher and, you know, yada, yada, yada. I think he'll hit fastballs. I don't worry about that as much. I think some of these harder breaking balls, he might give him some trouble. And I even over there, of course, you're seeing guys that are great pronators. You see great splitters, changeups over there. He got beat up by changeups and off speed a little bit. So I think that could be a little bit of a concern. So he's not number one for me in FYPD. I think we have him ranked five right now. If you preferred going with Dax Kilby or Steele Hall, totally understand that. You want to go Eli Willits over him? I kind of understand that. When you get to Seth Hernandez or Avar Arquette, like, I think Seth Hernandez is a phenomenal talent in a real life scenario. I'm very excited about him. It's still a prep pitcher and it takes those guys a really long time. Like, you know, Murakami might be at the end of his contract by the time Seth Hernandez is an established rotation piece. And that's just on the averages. It takes 5 to 6 years. Yeah. Even the good ones, it's 4 years. You know, there's no prep pitchers that are coming up in 2 years. It doesn't happen, you know. And if they do, like Andrew Painter, they end up getting injured. Or Ricky Tiedemann, who is a JUCO guy we thought was going to move quick, he ends up getting injured. So, you know, I think that's all kind of baked into the risk there. Let's talk about the guy that I think is actually the number one in FYPD, Dylan.
I was just going to say one last thing is that Zips has Murakami at a 126 WRC plus. So Zips believes, and if he's a 126 WRC plus, then you definitely should be taking him top five. So I think it's like a window thing. If you're far away, you know, go like Willits, or the guys you were saying, or if you're like competing, then, you know, you'd get someone who's going to make an impact in the major leagues. So go ahead. You're number one guy coming over.
Yeah. Well, and I understand that. Do you sort of feel, before we go into the next name, do you sort of feel that sometimes, like, the MLEs that they do from Japan to the major leagues are a little positive, a little rosy? Like, remember the Yoshida one where, like, the skills, I think, more or less translated, the power did not. What they had, if I remember, for him, like, power numbers were probably like 60 or 70 points higher in his slugging percentage than anything we've ever seen from. So I think there is some adjustment there. And I don't know if we've seen a guy like Murakami. So I don't know if there's a direct translation, because we haven't seen a lot of Japanese players that swing and miss like this, you know?
It seems pretty good on the pitchers, like Senga, Imanaga.
That translates, though.
Yeah, those were translated well. Yeah.
And I think that's a perfect segue for me to wax poetic about Tetsuya Omai. I want to make sure I get it right. Tetsuya Omai. That is Tatsuyaimai. For those listening that haven't read about this guy, haven't seen the name before, put him into your FYPD list. We didn't have him in the top 500. He's going to be posted, I believe, on November 18th is what was announced today. So he'll be posted in the next 7 days. We'll be adding him on to the top 500. He's probably going to be like my 36th, 37th best ranked prospect, which puts him directly behind Marcelo Meyer, Roki Sasaki. He's a few years older than Roki. We're not totally throwing the baby out with the bathwater. We think there are some opportunities here, particularly in the Dodgers organization, for Roki to get right, especially with a full offseason. You know, it was a weird year for him. They obviously going through the whole process of coming over here. There's always just some cultural translation like we talk about. So he's still very young. He's still 3 years younger than Omai. That said, Dylan, I don't know if you saw the Omai data that I had posted earlier today. It's pretty fun. He's undersized, right-hander, 5'11" is what he's listed at. But he uses that to good use. It's a really low arm slot. not quite sidearm, but it's probably about as low of a three quarters slot as you could have. It's a 5 foot release height, 5 foot, and it's heavy, heavy spin efficiency. He doesn't generate a lot of vert. It's like 13 to 15 inches of induced vertical break with like 12 to 15 inches of arm side. So it's a funky shaped fastball because of how low his arm slot is, how low his release height is. But because of that weird orientation, it's like a 2 p.m. sort of access, right? He gets a ton of spin efficiency on it. So it moves really funky. Sits 95 to 96. Will touch, you know, 97 to 99 miles an hour. He's got serious heat. It's a really unique fastball. It's almost like right-handed gauge jump, but the arm slot's kind of slower than that. So it's even different than that. He's got a really interesting slider as well, Dylan. Slider sits 85, 86 to like 87. You'll see it at 88, even 89 miles an hour at times. It's a gyro slider. Because of the arm slot, it kind of comes in sweepy and then downshifts. It's like Trey Savage's slider. It doesn't move glove side very much, if ever. So it has predominantly arm side movement. So when you look at it, it's like a 1.8 induced vertical break, negative 2.3 horizontal. Wow. He's got a 39% chase rate on that pitch. He's got a 51% swing rate on that pitch. He's got a 46% swinging strike rate. He's got a swing and miss rate or whiff rate. He's got an in zone whiff rate of 25% against that pitch. It is a filthy pitch. It's very unique. I wouldn't be shocked if he's throwing that thing close. He's throwing 30% of the time in Japan. He may throw it even more over here.
I saw the data and I looked and I'm like, oh yeah, 86 miles an hour. That's a nice slider. I did not catch at all that it's arm side. I thought that was glove side.
So yeah,
like, oh, it's like a little bullet slider, but it's like, no. It's like,
I'll have you log into some Synergy after this and take a look at some of the video. It is a filthy pitch. And then he mixes a split. I know in some of the data, it's missed change up and split. It's a splitter. Heavy arm side run on that splitter. So it's a true splitter. You know, somewhere between 13 to 16 inches of arm side run on that sucker at 85, 84. You know, almost 3 degrees separation off of the VAA. Something that was said to me by a few different people that have scouted Amai. He located a lot with a fastball low in the zone. So that 4.2 VAA on that fastball actually plays up when it's an upper third VAA. It's one of the reasons that he has a lot of chases, because when he does throw it up high, he gets a lot of chase swings. Guys have flatter swings overall in Japan. It's a little better at the high fastball. 20% swing and miss. I actually think some of those, he's not going to miss a ton of bats at the fastball, which you don't kind of in the big leagues any longer anyway, unless you're throwing it at 99 to 101 with, you know, 17 to 21 inches of ride, right? Like if you're in that range with a ton of heat, like it pretty much works. But I actually think by changing his plane of attack and having him work the top of the zone more, work that wipeout slider, he might be able to generate some more whiffs than he was before with the type of swings he's going to see. It's three above average pitches or better. Like I think it's an above average splitter. You know, got decent numbers against it. You can throw it for strikes. I think it's a plus slider. Maybe you can go plus plus on it. I've had people put a 70 on the fastball, and I think metrically you could probably go that far. You could maybe go plus. Because of the lack of swing and miss, and I want to see the attack plan change, I'm probably going to go 55 on it. The command ticked up a little bit last year. It was kind of an issue for him previously. But, you know, overall, you know, in his career, it's like a 4.4 walk per nine. It was 2.5 last year, 3.6 the year before, 4.1. So it's been progressively getting better. He'll be 28 next year, turns 28 in May. Kind of an interesting guy. He's got a lot of swagger too. He's going to be a fun one to follow. Think a little bit more of a loud personality maybe than some of the other Japanese players that have come over. So I'm really excited for him. I think he's my number one in FYPD. And Dylan, I'm going to make the case here. There is nobody in this FYPD that just shouts number one. right? Kate Anderson, Liam Doyle, JoJo Parker, all guys that I've seen at number one. Murakami, somebody I've seen at number one. We've talked about why we wouldn't take Murakami at number one. And then it's like I said, Dax Kilby, Steele Hall. Are you an Eli Willits guy? Some people want to go one on Willits. I'm not willing to go there. Seth Hernandez, Avar Kent. Like, this to me is at least like, I know this is like a mid-rotation outcome. I'm plugging this guy in immediately. And for the next 3 to 4 years, he's probably my fantasy number three or my number four. There was a draft like this years ago that had like Jonathan India and a couple other guys. It was a bad draft year. If we go back and look, it was one of the worst drafts. Yusei Kikuchi came over that year. And I remember that it was at Prospects Live, Matt Thompson and I doing the FYPD. And we ranked Kikuchi one. And people kind of pushed back. And like, granted, it wasn't great the first year. This guy's better than Kikuchi, but at the same time, you look back on that and you're like, yeah, that was probably the best fantasy asset for the next 5 years that came out of that FYPD. At least that was in the conversation for the top five. So, you know, I think you just take the money here and run with it. Like, I think he's number one. He's going to sign for a good amount of money. He's got interesting weapons. We know there's a starting pitcher track record. He's going to get starts. You know, granted, like if he signs in a bad park, that's not great. But I don't know. It's an interesting profile with good stuff. And I think it could really work. And I think there could be more strikeouts here than we maybe even anticipate, that there's maybe a way for him to unlock some stuff. I've had some teams say, because he does throw a curveball, if you see, that had like 2,500 to 2,600 RPMs, like 9 inches a sweep. He can sweep it, obviously. He can move it glove side. Somebody could maybe add like a bridge sweeper, like in the lower 80s, just to kind of play off of that slider and the fastball, etc. So we'll see what happens. I have him as my number one, Dylan. I do really like Amai. So we just spent like 10 minutes talking about Amai. I don't know if you have any closing thoughts here or like where you fall on the one in FYPD conversation.
I would take him number one. Maybe I'm not the litmus test, because usually I'm competing, and so I want guys who are going to make a impact immediately. So I would take the like Hyesung Kim and like those type of guys that I think are going to be in the majors sooner rather than later. So maybe I'm not the right person to ask, but Imai would be my number one, I think, because I think it's slam dunk. He's going to be in a rotation. He's going to be better than like Sugano, for example. I kind of have him in the like.
Oh yeah, way better. It's not Yamamoto. It's not Otani. Yeah. But I think it's right on the level with like Senga and some of these other guys that we've seen come over. You know, Imanaga, and had some success. It might be even like a better version of Imanaga, honestly. So. Yeah, he's really interesting, really good mover. Yeah, I'm in for it. Other guy that I wanted to mention here as well, we'll get him into the rankings for prospects when those go out. And actually, he might sneak into the first base, third base rankings. He's more of a first baseman. Kazuma Okamoto, OKAMOTO. He's older, another storied slugger, has had seasons at 33, 31, 31, 39, 30, 41 home runs in his career. Home runs were down a little bit. He was injured last year, but did hit 327, 416, 598. He strikes out a lot less than Murakami. He's a very good defender. I've even heard 70 grades at first base. Not that first base defense is going to get you in the lineup, but he seems like a set it and forget it first baseman that can maybe come over here, hit 270 with 18 to 24 home runs and drive in some runs and, you know, be a solid number four, number five hitter for like a mid-market sort of team. I've pitched it before. I think the Pirates should go after this guy. I think this guy would be the perfect guy for the Pirates to take a chance on and give decent money too, but not break the bank money. And you might actually get some upside. I posted his data too. I don't know if you had a chance to look at it. The skills are really good. Like, it's a good balance of patience and approach. He swings in zone a lot. He doesn't chase a lot, but the swing rate was like in the high 40s. really pretty good contact, especially really good contact for a power hitter. And it's like maybe 50, 55 sort of EVs. He doesn't have any crazy high-end EVs, but like the average is really good. He kind of like from a skills perspective reminded me of like a Kyle Manzardo sort of profile a little bit, right? Where doesn't have the high-end EVs, but like his 70 is like 50th percentile to like 90th percentile EVs are all really, really high. And like he stacks, you know, a lot of batted balls in those buckets.
Good angles too.
Consistently hitting at 90 plus, he's just not going to hit a 114, you know. And some of that is because of the plate approach and the contact skills. So I think this guy could translate a little bit. I think this is another sneaky guy that maybe I'm taking top 10 in FYPD. Doesn't have maybe the upside of the long-term value of Murakami. I think I'd rather have him than Murakami for the next 2 years, though. I don't know if that's crazy or not. It may be. Murakami may come over and hit 40 home runs, but I kind of feel like if you're in a redraft, this is the guy I would want to have on my team, not Murakami.
Yeah, we were, a couple DCs, and I had Okamoto ahead of Murakami. But they went earlier than I was hoping. But for exactly what you're saying, it kind of seems safer, kind of feels like a higher floor, 15 to 18 home runs. Like that'll be a solid little third baseman or first baseman wherever he lands. So, yeah, I like it for safety in an FYPD. Yeah, I think I like to take swings too. As much as I say, compete in my FYPDs. I also like I want upside if I'm not if I don't have a guy who's going to make an immediate impact. So I might have Murakami ahead of Okamoto in an FYPD. But in a redraft, I think I might go Okamoto.
There we go. We just talked three of the top Japanese free agents. There's also Kona Takahashi, who's coming over, who's an older pitcher, probably going to be like a long reliever or like a number five starter, kind of one of those guys. He should have come over a few years ago, didn't get posted. He's at Cebu Lion, I think, alongside Amai. And I've heard from people that they kind of learned their lesson with Takahashi, that they didn't post him early enough and maybe left some money on the table. So that's why they're posting Amai. So that said, we come back. We're going to talk a little bit of our catcher rankings and go from there. But we're going to take a quick break first.
This episode of FT is brought to you by Square. Your favorite neighborhood spots run on Square. Give me an example in Pennsylvania, Kratz.
Right down the street from my house, the Tap House. Not only is it an awesome place to hang out, get your beers, get your drinks, whatever it is, but you know what? The company has the simplicity of Square, and they give back to the community with 10% of all the proceeds that they bring in going back to community projects.
I love it. Sports and sports bars are so good at bringing together local communities, and you can actually take this ad as an excuse to go support your local spot and have yourself a day or a weekend in the neighborhood. Square is a proud partner of more than 4 million neighborhood businesses around the world. These businesses are what make the neighborhood the neighborhood. So visit square.com/go/foul to learn more. But before you do, go support your favorite neighborhood spot. You'll be happy you did. Square. See you in the neighborhood. Again, that's square.com/go/foul to learn more.
All right. And we are back. Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. Jeff Ponce, Dylan White. We just talked about three different Japanese players coming over from the MPB. I think that are all fantasy relevant, FYPD relevant, depending upon the rules in your league. Maybe in a later episode, we'll talk about some of the guys like Cody Ponce and some of these other guys that are coming back over that could be interesting and fantasy relevant. I like Cody Ponce a lot. And it's not just because we're,
brothers from another mother.
You know, like our names aren't spelt the same, but they're phonetically the same. My phonetic cousin, they're said the same, but Blaise Ponce or Pontez, he doesn't say it right. See, at least Cody says it right. But anyway, we'll talk about him another day. Let's talk a little bit about the catchers here. No shock. I mean, Cal Raleigh at number one, he had the greatest catching season of all time. So do we have to talk about it any further? He's number one going into next year. I don't know if I'm going to want to pay the Cal Raleigh price, but it's the number one catcher. There's no debate, right, Dylan?
Yeah, definitely no debate. Maybe the only question is whether he'll have the batting average he had last year. Obviously, he was like a 220 hitter for his career up until last year, so there's probably going to be regression back down. But, you know, if you're going to have 40 to 60 home runs from the catcher position, that's more than valuable.
Yeah, but pretty easy there. Number, just rounding out the top five, number two, we went Sammy Basayo. Number three, William Contreras. Number four, Ben Rice. Number five, Shea Langeliers. I don't think we have to spend any time on Contreras or Shea Langeliers. He had a great write-up in Langeliers. Had a great season. He's had two really good seasons in a row. Skills have been tracking up as well with the power, and he's in a great park and improving lineup. William Contreras has been one of the most consistent performers, even when he's down a little bit, had an injured year, still somebody that we believe in. Let's talk a little bit about Basayo at number two. Obviously, his very small sample size of 31 games, hit 165, 229, 330, had four home runs, though, shows some power, was chasing at a much higher rate than we'd like to see. It was just weeks after his 21st birthday. This was a guy that hit 79 home runs before the age of 21 in the minor leagues. Phenomenal talent. I just believe in the combination of bat to ball ability and power here and good angles. And I think the plate skills will tick up a little bit. I'm not terribly concerned that that's going to sink him. I think that chase rate that was like over 40% will probably tick more to like 33, 34. He's a bigger guy, longer levers. There's some level of chase on the shadow zone where he's getting extended on those balls, and I really don't mind him swinging on those.
I mean, he's perennial, meaning last couple of years because he hasn't been in the minors that long. Perennial Robo Scout, like top prospect. Just he's so young for the level, hits for huge power. Contact's not so bad either. Barrel rates, all the angle stuff's good. So yeah, it's the chase is a bit high. The contact is average, but he's only 21. Like the peak projection that RoboScout gives is like 35 home runs, like 135 WRC plus. Like it's ridiculous. So hit for power. I kind of, you know, I see like a like, although he chases, like you said, at like 40% right now. He brings it down. I could see like 275 batting average in his peak years, and hopefully he stays behind the plate because he's got a pretty good hose for an arm too.
Yeah. And I think he'll catch enough, right? Like, I think that's one of the benefits of this being baked in is like Adley's there a few more years.
Yeah.
He's going to catch enough to rest Adley some days. Maybe he plays a little first base, plays a little DH. And then you have Basayo playing a little first base, playing a little DH. I think it's already set up. I would imagine that Mountcastle, if they can, probably gets moved this season. And they keep him around as, like, you know, some depth that's needed. The other one I want to talk to you about is Ben Rice. It was a pretty phenomenal season. He is a strong side platoon bat, so there are some concerns there. There's a chance they take the reins off a little bit more and he sees more production. He was one of the most dangerous hitters in that lineup throughout the season and had a really, really good year. He's another guy that isn't like a full-time catcher. So baking in the limited amount of wear and tear, right, that he's going to see, he's not going to be exposed to that wear and tear as much as other players are. I think that does boost the value a little bit for me. And, you know, this is a guy that had a sub 20% strikeout rate, hit 26 home runs. It's very, very repeatable. The batting average could even come up a little bit. He was actually a little bit unlucky on balls in play, plays in a great ballpark. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that, you know, he hits 30 home runs and bats 275 next year with really good counting stats. Had 74 runs this year, 65 RBIs. It could be 80 and 80 next year, and it could exceed those numbers even. I kind of want to attach myself to this train over the next 3 years. It's big left-handed power, and that plays in Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, so couple things, like you touched on in the Basayo thing, if he's playing a lot of first base but retains catcher eligibility, that's the dream. So he's going to get, you know, the 500 plus plate appearances but stay as a catcher, so you can put him in that slot. That's what you want. Cashman today, November 12th, said, and maybe this is a bluff to like get a good price on some free agents for first base, but he said today that Ben Rice is going to be full-time player. So again, whether or not that's taken with a grain of salt or not, but they intend to play him a lot. So everything you said, but like with a ceiling of maybe he gets 600 plate appearances. So you could see 30 home runs, good OBP, 270 batting average, short porch in Yankee Stadium, great lineup, etc. Like with catcher eligibility, it's kind of everything you want.
I think one of the things that needs to be said too is like, he had a 255 batting average. He had a 299 like expected batting average. He had a 499 slug. He had a 581 expected slug. He had a good season, and his expected numbers were even better than what his good season numbers were. That's the kind of guy that you want to buy into, right? Like, that's the signal. That's telling me that, okay, this is repeatable, and this is something that you can project into next season and say, all right, I think we have good production coming our way. So for the questions around Ben Rice, I think that's one of the reasons that we did that. I don't know if there's anybody else here in the top 10. I was going to let you maybe wax poetic a little bit about Augustin Ramirez. That's your guy. Another guy that might not see full-time at-bats at catcher, but could see a lot of at-bats getting some DH and I think some first base as well. Talk to me a little bit about Ramirez, because I know there's some numbers in here in particular that you kind of honed in on.
Yeah, so he's 23 hitting the middle of the batting lineup, and he had 21 home runs, 16 stolen bases. So 21-15, maybe 20-20. So you're getting stolen bases from a catcher. He's young, so he's going to quote-unquote improve on that. All looks excellent and dandy. But, you know, under the hood, like that's the positive, and it's incredibly glowingly positive. Under the hood, he swooned in the second half. His WRC plus dropped from like above 100, above average, to like 76. His defense is actually quite bad. So whether he retains the catcher eligibility, I'm not sure. I'm worried. He may get it. Like, he may qualify in 2026. Probably it's pretty likely he will. But 2027 and beyond, I don't know. Because Joe Mack, who's a very good defensive catcher, also a pretty good hitter, is probably going to get a lot of at-bats there. So that's why I kind of brought him back. Like, you might wonder, a guy who has 20-20 ability, great power, young, hitting in the middle of a lineup, like that's like arrows up. But, you know, there's some on the horizon in the future, maybe there's going to be some gray clouds. So that's why we kind of a bit risk averse and conservative approach and put him at number six.
Yeah. Other guy that we weren't risk averse on, because I was placing the prospects, Dylan, you can yell at him about the MLB guys. I talked about a little bit last week. We have Reynaldo Rodriguez at eight. I just really believe in the skills here, man. There just are not a lot of guys that have this level of power, these kind of angles, this kind of plate approach, and that kind of contact. And then it immediately works when he comes stateside. Like, he destroyed the Florida Complex League, so they had to move him up to Palm Beach. Took him a couple of weeks to settle in. And then eventually he destroyed the Florida State League, which is one of the hardest places to hit in the minor leagues. It is a terrible place. There's a marine layer there. The air is really heavy. The ball doesn't travel. He hit 20 home runs as an 18-year-old across all those levels. Got up to high A. He's really exciting. I think he's a guy that you, regardless of him being a catcher, he's somebody that I do want to sort of attach myself to, because I think he's going to like reign supreme in this area. And I think he's going to stick behind the plate. So we'll see what happens. Maybe that's an over aggressive ranking. Maybe he should have moved down a little bit, but the rest of these guys are older catchers. And if there's one thing I know, older catchers eventually break down, Dylan. Next thing I want to call out here, this was kind of your target this year. Talk to me a little bit about Francisco Alvarez. It's been a couple of weird years, but there's been some glimpses of hope. So talk to me a little bit about that.
He is a target for me because it has been a couple of weird years. It's a bunch of thumb injuries on both hands. I'm sure the managers that have Francisco Alvarez rostered are extremely frustrated. So that's why he's a target. Maybe you can get him cheap. He still projects incredibly well. He has a 118 WRC plus projected this year. That's like a peak of 130, which is like Will Smith kind of territory. He's still pretty young. I just think that he's a guy that can still hit 30 home runs. He's still very young. He has reasonable batting averages that don't hurt you. Yeah, he'll be 24. Hit the projections this year have him at like 20 to 25 home runs, 240 batting average, 118 WRC plus. So if that's at 24, at 27, you know, say 28 to 30 home runs, and like a 130 WRC plus, something like that, maybe not that high. But I mean, I'm expecting upside. These projections are based on what he has done, and he has been plagued by injury. So his actual production, which the projections are generally based on, is lower than what it quote unquote should be. So I think he is just a diamond in the rough, trying to get him everywhere. Obviously, podcasting publicly like this, I will not be able to. I think he'd be a target for me for sure. I'm still on the Francisco Alvarez train for sure.
Well, and I'm going to talk about somebody whose train I'm still on. That would be the Adley Rutschman train. We have him at 13. It's been a couple of really down years. Had a hand injury that kind of sapped away a lot of the numbers in the second half last year. Came back quickly from it. Who knows? I mean, I know some of the split numbers don't necessarily back that, as the right-handed swing was good and it was his top hand and some of that stuff. Had two oblique injuries this year. But a lot of the stuff that was concerning in 2024 ticked back up again. So his hard hit rate, I believe, was as high as it's been at any point in his career. The barrel rate climbed back up to, I think, exactly what it was in 2023. 7.5, 7.5. He actually had the same hard hit rate in both those years of 38.6, 38.6, which are career highs. The underlying skill stuff was pretty good. It was the lowest O swing in a full season that he's had in his career. It was of 22.5, which is an excellent O swing. It was a zone contact of 91.9%, which was the highest of his career. It was the lowest swinging strike rate of his career at 5.4%. So there was a lot of skill stuff here when I look under the hood with Adley Rutschman that makes me think it was probably just the injuries. There's some wear and tear that's going to happen. He's going to be 28 years old. We're still in prime years for Adley Rutschman. The next couple of years, I think I'm buying back in. I'm going to buy the dip. I'm going to buy the discount with Rutschman. And I'm going to hope that, you know, he returns back to the player that we saw in 2023 that hit 20 home runs and batted 277 with, you know, a 13.4% walk rate. I think when we look at the skills, Dylan, they're actually better in some regards than they were prior. So I think he could probably get back to that. You know, I even think that maybe the injuries weren't bothering him on the field as much, and it was just a matter of stopping and starting and not really being able to stay on the field consistently this year, you know, as he was held to only 90 games. So it will be interesting to see how he returns to form or doesn't. Maybe this is just the trend and Adley had a couple of good years and, you know, it's just on the downward spiral now. I'm willing to buy that it was just the injuries and that he could potentially bounce back. I think the Orioles in general will probably bounce back a little bit this year. We'll see how the rotation is, but I think at least the lineup, a lot of injuries across that lineup and some guys having off years. So I'm going to buy the dip. And I mean, I think where Adley is being valued right now, it's probably the right time to buy. And he's still young. He's still 28. He's 27 right now, but it'll be 28. It's a February birthday. So it'll be 28 going into the season and 28 for the entirety of the year, then 29 next year. It's how birthdays work. I don't know if you realize that. but you know, 28, 29, yeah, I'll buy into those years, especially in a good lineup. And used to be a good park, but we'll see. Depends on which side of the plate he's hitting from. So I don't know. I'm going to buy back in on Adley. I guess I have nothing else to say. I don't know if you have any thoughts on Rushman.
No, I think it, like what I said with Alvarez, he's at his lowest value by your league mates, I'm sure, because it's been, you know, declining WRC pluses for the last few years, the Samuel Basayo entering this picture. So people who are maybe terrified that the cliff's gone, and the guy still has a 115 WRC plus career. And like you said, he's only 28. So like, why would the Orioles rush him back in a lost season for the team? Let him heal up and come out guns blazing in 2026. So like we said, the last sentence in the write-up for him was a bounce back in 2026 is not only possible, it's plausible. So I like that pick a lot.
Yeah. And like I said, he's my guy. I'm bouncing with Adley again. Let's talk a little bit about the last one. We got some questions on this one. We had a really low ranking on Hart Goodman. We got Goodman down at 16. He did return a top two catcher season last year as he hit 31 home runs and batted 278. Dylan, I don't know about you. I think so. I think you back me on this. I just don't buy Goodman being able to repeat this season. And I think when you look at it historically, the only guys that have been able to come close to repeating it were like Salvi Perez had a season like this in 2021 and had a similar season in some regards in 2022. I mean, he wasn't a top five catcher. I think he was maybe sixth or seventh on Razzball Player Radar that year in 2022. But it was like 23 home runs and a 250 batting average after hitting, you know, 270 whatever with 48 home runs. I just don't see Goodman necessarily repeating this when you look at some of the skills. Like I said, I looked at his historically going back to 2021. He had a 39% or higher O swing. I can give you the exact number. I think it was maybe like 39.7 or something like that. Depends what you look at. I think I pulled maybe Sports Info Solutions numbers. So those are higher than the StatCast numbers, which are 36.2. But 39.4 on that number, because I can pull it on the leaderboards. And then a swinging strike rate of 16% or higher, his was 16.32. There were four other players in MLB this year that had at least 350 plate appearances that had similar numbers. PCA, which we've heard a lot of debate about him, but PCA also stole 35 bases. Ezekiel Tovar, who had a very down year. That was a 78 WRC plus this year. Ryan Mountcastle, who had a down year, and Gabriel Arias. Previous year, Sedane Rafaela, Ezekiel Tovar, Nick Castellanos. Previous year, Salvador Perez, Javi Baez, Tovar again. Louis Robert Jr. had a year like this, had a really good year that year, but that's probably the only time he's ever seen 350 plate appearances. Nick Castellanos, Jake Berger, this is 2023, Jose Siri, 2022, Javi Baez again, Salvi Perez again, Avisail Garcia, Michael Chavis, Nick Castellanos, Adolis Garcia, again, 2021, Adolis Garcia, Ryan Mountcastle, Avisail Garcia, Javi Baez, Salvi Perez. Most of these seasons, especially since 2022, are under 100 WRC plus. So there are years where this happens. This was about as good of a year as you could have with those sort of plate skills. So I don't know if I want to gamble on that. And I don't know if I want to gamble on counting stats with a Rockies catcher. And I'll bring up why. The recovery time and the injury risk of playing at altitude, we know for sure is higher. This has been studied. The injury risk of playing catcher is higher. You combine those two things and then you factor in the plate skills. I just have a lot of concerns with Goodman. He may have another 25 home run season where he hits 250 and, you know, the OBP is bad. I just don't fully buy into it. And I'm fading him this year. We faded him in the rankings. I think that's just a statement of like, we just don't buy the skills here. And I don't buy that a guy's going to drive in 91 runs in that terrible lineup.
Yeah. So sure. The positives, 30 home runs, plays in Coors, 26 years old. And the defense wasn't so bad at all. First half, second half was actually pretty much the same. So it wasn't a thing of like he started off hot and then like completely faded, but like it's hidden by the incredible first half. It's not like that. So he did pretty well. So those are all the goods. The bad is like the chase rate is so high, the whiff rate so high, the strikeout rate so high, and the walk rate is very low. It's like bottom 20% in the league. 18%, 18th percentile, 5.7%. So he's not very good in OBP leagues. He's projected to be a 303 OBP. I don't know if he had 580 plate appearances last year. I don't think he's going to get that. Just for all the things you said, it's hard to play in altitude. It's hard to recover from injury, etc. So if he gets to 500 plate appearances, that's 25 home runs. So obviously that's good. The X batting average, the expected batting average was like 247. So like if he hits 250 instead of 280, you got a 250 with 25 home runs, which is very good. But like Logan O'Hoppe is kind of doing that. Like you've got a whole bunch of guys in that area. And if he has 500 plate appearances, that batting average is going to drop, pull you down a bit. So unlike a guy like Ivan Herrera or Gabriel Moreno, who boost your batting average, boost your OBP, this is a bit of a sink. So I see the argument that he could be higher. I see the argument that he's going to, the bottom's going to drop out as well. So, you know, we kind of played it in between, have him, 16th, 15th, something like that, which I think is a pretty good spot. Like, I think I would rather have Gabriel Moreno than Hunter Goodman, especially in an OBP league. And yeah, I mean, I think we've covered all elements of Hunter Goodman right now.
Exactly. So that's why we're as low as we are. If you are high on Hunter Goodman, I totally understand it. But this is where we just have a difference of opinion. So one of us is going to be right this year, right? So he's either going to be good or bad. I don't think there's any in between with Hunter Goodman. So we will see. All right, Dylan, catchers are down. We're not going to have to talk catchers. We'll be back talking first baseman next week, which is, I think, a little bit more exciting than catchers, no? A little bit.
I could see that.
Right. Yeah. So we'll have that news. I think by the time we record, we'll also know who's been left unprotected for the Rule 5. Maybe we'll talk about some guys that were protected, as they might be really interesting targets in your dynasty, your fantasy leagues, but definitely your your NFBC leagues, your draft champions, some of those, right? Guys get protected, yeah. Get on it early. Hey, this guy might have opportunity. He's that much closer to being in the major leagues. That said, thank you for tuning in. This has been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. I'm Jeff, he's Dylan, and you're listening. Cheers.